Well, good evening, everyone, and thank you for being here. It is a joy to see you all here. It is a joy to perform this music here in my home church with my home team. Everything is coming up roses, as they say. It's going to be a wonderful show. So I have some comments to make before we get into the music. First of all, for whom is this the first London Pro Musica concert that they've ever attended? Wonderful. 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 Thank you, especially for being here, and we sincerely hope that we don't botch it up too bad, and that we see you again for more. If you have in your pocket one of these, mine is an iPhone 13 mini, and mine is now on airplane mode. If you have one, please take it out and turn the blasted thing off, because we certainly don't want you to be that person. And you're thinking, oh no, I know mine's off. I turned it off earlier. Yeah, except when you turned it on again and you forgot. So do it. Thank you. Also, you'll notice in the program, there's no intermission. So if, how do we say in church, if the Spirit moves you, or you are being moved by the Spirit, the washrooms are just through there and up the stairs. If you can manage to do that between pieces, that's wonderful. If not, hey, fine. Just so you know. If you're waiting for an intermission, you will be sorely disappointed. So, why are we here? Well, for a choral concert, I know that. I mean, what is it about Christmas music that draws us together every year? Well, some of you might be thinking, well, I won a ticket, so that's why I'm here. Or I was strong-armed by one of these fine singers into buying a ticket, and I don't really know what I've gotten myself into. I appreciate that, and thanks for being here nevertheless. But there's something particular about Christmas music that draws us in. The season in general, sure, it might be the eggnog, probably not. It might be the decorating of the tree. It might be the music that we look forward to the most. I have a theory. My theory is that it's nostalgia, sure. It's tradition. Okay. It's familiarity. Yeah, but it's something more than that. We could do a concert of all your favorites, all the hits, nothing unexpected. I don't think that's what we need. We could do music that is completely unknown to you, written all last week. Nobody wants that either. So what is this getting on about? I believe that when we put those two things together, that familiarity, that nostalgia, that tradition, but then also some music that you may have never heard before, whether it be by Felix Mendelssohn or whether it be something written just this past year, when we combine those things, we experience, in my opinion, something akin to great music itself. Tension. Tension that comes from the unknown, from the uncertain, the unfamiliar. And then the release, the relief of the beloved, the familiar. And I strongly believe that we need both of those things in order to have truly great musical experiences like we do here. In a nutshell, it's our desire to honor the traditions that we have, the favorites, and add to them some lesser known gems, and what's not in your program, some excerpts from a beloved Christmas story. No, it's not Dave and the Turkey. Good, no one got up and left. Instead, I've decided to read some excerpts at various points in the program from Dylan Thomas's A Child's Christmas in Wales. It was written over 70 years ago, and it's filled with his traditions, sure, but I believe we can easily transpose our own in their place. Christmas traditions, and we all have our own. For me, it's leaving the Christmas tree lights on all night on Christmas Eve. And it's chocolate-covered marzipan first thing on Christmas morning with a cup of black coffee. That's my breakfast. And it's music. Always music. Something that story and this concert and our tradition and why we're here tonight all have in common. So ladies and gentlemen, thank you for being here and enjoy the show.
Thank you.
One Christmas was so much like the other in those years around the sea town corner now. Out of all sound except the distant speaking of the voices I sometimes hear a moment before sleep, that I can never remember whether it snowed for 6 days and six nights when I was 12, or whether it snowed for 12 days and 12 nights when I was 6. All the Christmases roll down toward the two-tongued sea, like a cold and headlong moon bounding down the sky that was our street. And they stop at the rim of the ice-edged fish-freezing waves, and I plunge my hands in the snow and bring out whatever I can find. In goes my hand into the wool-white, bell-tongued ball of holidays, resting on the rim of the carol-singing sea. And out come Mrs. Protheroe and the fireman. It was on the afternoon of the day of Christmas Eve, and I was in Mrs. Protheroe's garden waiting for cats with her son, Jim. It was snowing. It was always snowing at Christmas. December, in my memory, was as white as Lapland, although there were no reindeers. But there were cats. Patient, cold, and callous, our hands wrapped in socks, we waited to snowball the cats. Sleek and long as jaguars and horrible whiskered, spitting and snarling, they would slide and sidle over the white back garden wall, and the lynx-eyed hunters, Jim and I, fur-capped and moccasin trappers from the Hudson's Bay, off Mumbles Road, would hurl our deadly snowballs at the greens of their eyes. The wise cats never appeared. We were so still. Fleet-footed Arctic marksmen in the muffling silence of the eternal snows, eternal ever since Wednesday, that we never heard Mrs. Protheroe's first cry from her igloo at the bottom of the garden. Or, if we heard it at all, it was to us like the far-off challenge of our enemy and prey, the neighbor's polar cat. But soon the voice grew louder. "Fire!" cried Mrs. Protheroe, as she beat the dinner gong. As we ran down the garden with the snowballs in our arms toward the house, the smoke, indeed, was pouring out of the dining room, and the gong was bombulating, and Mrs. Protheroe was announcing ruin like a town crier in Pompeii. This was better than all the cats in Wales standing on the wall in a row. We bounded into the house, laden with snowballs, and stopped at the open door of our smoke-filled room. Something was burning, all right. Perhaps it was Mr. Protheroe, who always slept there after the midday dinner with a newspaper on his face. But he was standing in the middle of the room saying, "A fine Christmas," and smacking at the smoke with a slipper. "Call the fire brigade," cried Mrs. Protheroe, and she beat the gong. "They won't be here," said Mr. Protheroe. "It's Christmas." There was no fire to be seen, only clouds of smoke, and Mr. Protheroe standing in the middle of them, waving his slipper as though he were conducting. I like that bit. "Do something," he said. And we all threw our snowballs into the smoke. I think we missed Mr. Protheroe and ran out of the house to the telephone box. "Let's call the police as well," Jim said, "and the ambulance, and Ernie Jenkins. He likes fires." But we only called the fire brigade. And soon the fire engine came, and three tall men in helmets brought a hose into the house, and Mr. Protheroe got out just in time before they turned it on. Nobody could have had a noisier Christmas Eve. And when the firemen turned off the hose and were standing in the wet, smoky room, Jim's aunt, Miss Protheroe, came downstairs and peered in at them. Jim and I waited, very quietly, to hear what she would say to them. She said the right thing, always. She looked at the three tall firemen in their shining helmets, standing among the smoke and cinders and dissolving snowballs, and she said, "Would you like anything to read?"
Lord, Christmas, to Christmas, to Christmas.